Okay. So, Julia, welcome to the show. I'm super happy to have you on the show here in this part of this relaunch. And yeah, it's just a pleasure to speak to you and to explore with you the world of psychedelics, plant medicine, and everything what comes along with that.
Thanks for the invite.
Of course, of course. So let's get started. Why psychedelic work? Like, what is your big why? Why is this work so important to you or in general?
My big why. Good question. So in my last life, I would call my old life, I've been in corporate world. So I worked a lot with leadership people, with executives, with employees in different companies, and it was a deep work. But I always felt like there could be more. It was like a barrier where I was always like running against. And it felt like I would love to go deeper with these people because I feel like there is so much underneath. And if that is shown, and if they look at it and they can work with it, then there can be a change on a different level, also in companies or also in the person itself, that then influences how they lead, how they live their life. And problems might change and become more like challenges that you can handle. And I started for myself, just for myself, taking psychedelics to see, to have a deeper look. And that time I thought, like, I did so many things. I did so many like therapy courses, therapy for myself. And I felt like there's not a big deep hole that I could tumble about. But then I started for myself and I saw, like, oh, now I understand. So there's a whole new world to explore. And that was for me the switch where I really realized I want to work with psychedelics, not only for like therapy. I think that's the one part we can go into later, maybe as well. The therapy part that is now explored and researched, and which is very important. But I think it's also a big part in self-exploring, self-development, and also like preventing things that can come up later if they are not handled well. So I think that's my big why, and I want to help people see their own truth and to feel into what they are in a different way. Even though there are many ways, but for the people who really want that, I want to be like the midwife to make that possible.
Beautiful, beautifully put. I love also the analogy with the midwife, almost like a midwife of consciousness. When was for you kind of the moment when you started serving? How was it for you, either in integration work or maybe as a facilitator? Do you recall the first time when you actually made this kind of flip and went out of the corporate or mindfulness work into, okay, I'm actually allowed to call myself now a psychedelic integration coach or servant. Like, how do you recall this memory?
I think there are a few. I mean, it was like it's always a how do you say that, gliding scale. I think you just glide into it because that's what happens when people ask me, I want to do the same thing that you do. How can I become a facilitator? And for me, it's not like black and white, so it's not a job like coaching. Also, most of the coaches are not able to survive from only coaching, and I think that's the same thing. You build things up, and for me it's always like mixing in the beginning. You maybe have your old life, your old job, and then you glide into new things and you realize, oh, that could be a part of a new job, and then maybe it becomes a new job or your whatever why you're living life. And for me, it was the same. So I was still as a freelancer in the corporate world, and then I stepped more into this kind of facilitating, mainly in a group, so in a team. So it was not me only doing it. So it was also like the responsibilities are spread all over the team. That made me feel more comfortable, and It was a very beautiful work because I was more and more invited in stepping more forward and doing having more responsibility in the ceremonies and how to build things up. And I'm very grateful for that time because I learned so much. I learned a lot about myself, about my power, about new abilities, about new resources that I never thought I would have. And that was a very beautiful way to step into this part. And the integration, I would see a bit apart from that because I worked with people since I can remember. So this part of accompanying people, supporting people in their processes, in their changes, in their transformation, that was nothing new to me. So I already had a big toolkit and systemic background in coaching and different modalities, and that really helped me to guide people or to help people in the integration. So that felt like there was not so much new to me. So I felt very comfortable with doing it, even though I learned a lot of new modalities, like from the shamanic practices or from somatic work or breath work. And this all combined became a kind of integration that I do now. And that is still evolving. The more that I learn, the newer modalities that I learn for myself, it always changes a bit. But I feel like when you have a basis in how to accompany people through changes, I think that's a big plus already because you know how changes work and it's not a magic pill you take and then everything is different. And people after psychedelic experiences, they will have a long process. And integration is a lifetime process for me. It's a lifestyle. Sorry, I'm still a bit from a cold. So and it is an ongoing process, so it needs time. And when you know that, I think that's the most important thing you can do as a facilitator, as a integration facilitator as well, to have this patience and to be with the person that is in front of you where the person is. It's not about you guiding a process. It is accompanying people in change. And that is not so much difference for me, at least within the psychedelic world or in the coaching world or however you want to call it. So I think there are different parts in my change from job to job. So I started earlier with the integration part because I felt more comfortable with it. And I then collected more new modalities that I put into it. And the other part is becoming a facilitator and facilitate with different substances and feeling good. And how do I want to create this room? This space, is it a ceremony or is it just a session? Is it sitting or is it really guiding? Is it more therapy-like or is it more coaching-like? So I think that's also like, yes, you bring yourself in that space, but still, it is also a question of what is the space? Not for everybody, a big ceremony with a lot of instruments and indigenous background is the right thing to start, for example. So I think it's also as well, taking into consideration where you are and what you show in that particular space. So it is an ongoing story as well. And I'm still learning in it. And I think I will never stop learning in it. And that's the beauty of it. But yeah, it's not like black and white. You step from
Right.
one side to the other. Long answer to
Beautiful.
your question.
I love
But
it.
yeah.
That's what we're here for. Why psychedelics though? There are so many powerful mind-altering modalities, I would assert, like breathwork you mentioned, or even tantric practices, that meditation at a certain level can also leads to an altered state of mind. Why has your path chosen psychedelics, or why have you chosen the path of psychedelics? Like, what do you see? What's the power of them for us humans, but also maybe collectively? You mentioned already a bit, but I would really love to hear more on that.
So for me, I think personally, I also feel like I go in a different path than the path that I oftentimes offer for clients. So I wouldn't call it How to describe it? It's not better or worse, but I think it is deeper or more challenging than it could be for maybe the first sessions that are very fine held in a very safe container for somebody who starts with it. And I think the more you go with it, the more often you maybe take psychedelics for your own development, the deeper it can go. And that for me is the beauty. Sorry. That you start and you maybe feel like, oh my God, this is amazing and this is the best thing ever happened. I might never have to do it again. And in my case, it was like that. I thought like, okay, now I understand it. And then there was a call later on where I thought like, I think I have to go deeper. There is something that I partly solved now. It feels good. It feels stable. So I go on and I want to go deeper. And with time, it developed from working on past topics, on, I wouldn't call it trauma because I don't feel like I have a real capital T trauma. But of course, there are things that need to be looked at and solved maybe in a different way. And then it became more like intergenerational topics, then more collective. And there are these mystical experiences, these very deep spiritual experiences that connect you with death, that let you go through death, that let you see afterwards the world in a whole different way. And that for me is something that I don't want to miss anymore. This kind of work, this kind of going deep and throwing myself into the depth that can be very challenging still. And I never feel like I'm done. And still it's not like, oh, I need to have more, more, more. It's more like, okay, I can work with it. I understand a bit and I understand a bit more, and then I can go a step deeper. And for me, there is no ending in it. And for me, this I personally couldn't find in any other modality. And that's the reason why, for me, psychedelics is the right choice.
Yeah, it relates and resonates with what you're sharing. I would really love to dive in deeper to understanding how did psychedelics changed you. So how did it change how you relate to yourself, maybe to life? You mentioned already mystical experience or frames of reality. Like what's your biggest learnings and realizations from your personal journeys?
I would say, first of all, like being a woman. Because I always felt like a woman, so I never had the doubt of in which body I am or how do I feel, how do I want to describe myself. But coming from this corporate world, I was always like with this hair, with an okay, pretty face. So I always felt like I have to be more and I have to be strong and I have to be assertive. And I cut my hair for years. My hair was very short because I felt more comfortable working in the corporate world. I mean, that was my problem because I felt like they only see me as a maybe sexy woman who doesn't have something to say, and I always had to fight for my stand in this space. And when I started with psychedelics, and that's now quite a long journey, but now I would say I know how it feels to be a woman. And that really is, I think, for me, the biggest change that I saw in myself. And besides that, I think it's also like for me, this kind of things that change around you without you even changing it, like family constellations in how you relate to people, how you react to things in the world that happen around you, how you react to people and circumstances. So it gave me much more calmness and equanimity and acceptance. And I think that a big part of that was also like really working with death and preparing everything for my own death. And that when I go, everything's prepared and I don't have to I don't have to think about anymore, but I don't have to worry about the people who are left. So they have everything they need. How I want to be buried, how I want to have the ceremony, who gets the money that I don't have, and all these kind of things. And that was a very deep and big process for me. And then after that, I also felt like it was connected to a psychedelic experience after that. So we prepared like 3 months for that and had a psychedelic experience. And it was really going into the depth of death for me. And this changed my life again, because I look very differently regarding death, but also regarding living. And that for me is a very, very beautiful process that I had within this whole process. But yeah, I think that are the most present things. And for sure, like feeling more like a woman, it makes me more feeling grounded and more stable. And I have another presence. And it's not the, I always had a good presence also in corporate, and it was more a fake. So fake it until you make it. It wasn't that I feel it. It was more like, I know how to act because this is asked from me, but I don't feel it. Inside, I was just very anxious and I didn't feel good with it. And now it is like, okay, I'm here, take it or leave it. And I feel more calm with that. And I think that's something that I feel is really beautiful.
I absolutely love how you put it, and I can attune into what you're saying, like really coming home to oneself and to putting down this kind of mask that we so unconsciously present to our world around us, and what a homecoming, what a celebration it feels. When, as you said, like it's just like, take it or leave it, I'm here. And what I found also very fascinating is that death and womanhood is kind of what stood out for you the most in this regard. To me, women are such power beings. We rarely contemplate that they are kind of almost a portal between the living and the dying, both bearing children. The womb itself is this organ that creates this this channel, if you will. I would love to hear maybe a little bit deeper when you said it changed the way how you looked at life and death. In what way? Like, how did it change? How was it before? In what way? I mean, you mentioned that you already started consciously preparing for the physical death. Is there anything else that really shifted your perspective?
I enjoy things more in my life. I don't think as much anymore about what I should do or what I should accomplish, or that I should, I hope my mother doesn't hear it, but that I should think about the money later that I have. So I really feel like, okay, I put the things that I have in the moment that I have. And for me, this feels right. Let's see what is in 20 years. But I have a new connection to that. And I always thought more about what if later, what if, and what should I do? And of course, I still plan. And of course, there are a lot of things that I would love to do, but I feel more joy in doing it without hesitance. And regarding death, it feels more, I feel more at peace with people that go. And also, this thought about me dying one day is not, I'm not afraid of it. And that also gives another quality to life. So like, I don't know, for example, when you go and you fly with the airplane and people are afraid that it might crash. And for me, it's really like, okay, yes, I know. And that's the possibility. It's not very likely, but it's a possibility. So what can I do about it? Nothing. So when I go and fly, I just give all my trust into the people who are flying this aircraft. And I can relax, because if it happens, yeah, that's it. And for me, it's more like living the life now that I want to live, and not when I'm dying to have the need to say, oh, I should have done this, or I should have done that. And that's also like connecting with the people that I surround myself, being more conscious about the connections that I want to have and the people I want to surround myself with and to cooperate with. And I'm more selective in that, and in doubt, just choosing for myself and being with myself. I'm very good in being alone as well with myself only. And that is also a quality that I develop more and more, and I have more, balance in all this, as it feels.
That's already a powerful transformation in itself. And I don't know about the audience who's listening, but I can really feel when you speak that these are not just words, but they're really embodied in a very deep way in your body and in your spirit. How about transformations of the people you worked with? I would really love to know, in your experience for the different facilitations, integrations, maybe you came across people who shared their experiences. Have you experienced some transformations or some shifts that truly surprised you, that really pushed the boundaries of what you thought is possible, like to shift, to change for psychedelic experiences? Do you have any stories, any experiences you can bring forward and share with us?
I mean, there are so many beautiful changes, transformations that I see. I think what struck me most was always when we did retreats in Ireland as well. And Ireland, the people, like the tendency is that they have more addictions, there is more trauma, there are more like aggressiveness maybe in the houses at home. And for me, it felt always like it was quite heavy, like the energy was heavier than in other places. And the more, like, the people were so nice and so beautiful, and to see how they go through these changes. And I saw a few people coming like 2-3 times a year, and they stopped their addictions. And I think that was something that really impressed me, that the whole life of these people also changed. Like, they were able to let go of this addiction, to go to really the depth of the ground of it, to work with it. And you really saw like the change within the faces within a year, like a totally different person. And it was so beautiful to be able to witness that. And I think that's the, for me, one of the most impressive things. But I mean, for me, there are very often these kind of big changes that people are right after a retreat or right after a session. There is so much that they worked through, so that the face totally looks different the other day or after the retreat. And for me, it's more the question of, is that the right time in your life to do this change? Will you really be able to keep on to this change and to make the adjustments in your life that are necessary to really stay with that change? And there's where integration comes into place, or also other retreats or sessions that might be necessary, because it's not a one-time magic pill and everything is done and I don't have anything to do. To work for it, to have this change. And I think I oftentimes also saw people like they had a big change, but maybe it was not yet the right moment in life where the body, the mind, the soul can really work with this change and is ready for this change. So there were people who just flipped back, and they were sometimes worse when they came again. But in the end, it was oftentimes a big change that sometimes, you need more time. Change needs time.
I Love how you put the bridge also to the integration work in your answer. And I would really love to explore also what you mentioned, that sometimes big changes or big surges of motivation come directly after very intense psychedelic experiences. And you mentioned that some people might not sustain these changes. So how do you support people in this integration process? So the process after they deep dived into their soul or into the roots and are ready to face truth or the challenge that they have. So what's the process? What's your framework? What's your approach? How do you support people?
So it always depends also on what, where do the key people come from and what do they do with me? So is it a retreat, for example, with a company with Set and Setting, for example, that I work for, a German company who's doing retreats in Holland, and there we have a quite set frame. So there are two integration sessions afterwards online with a group call, and there's the possibility to get in contact with us if they need more help. But oftentimes it is like giving the people some time to integrate by themselves and to, most of all, sleep, take rest, don't jump ahead and do all the changes that you're wanting to do. So as they were, we always say, like the 2 weeks after a session, after a big experience, don't move house, don't leave your wife, husband, or your partner, and don't change jobs, and all these kind of things, because sometimes it is an invitation to do that, and you feel like you have the energy, and it's a total right decision to take, and I have to take it now. But oftentimes it is good to wait and to let things settle. And in these 2 weeks after such a big experience, there are still so many changes. And even afterwards, there are still many changes. But in these 2 weeks after an experience, your brain is still like in a building phase and it needs some rest. And it's not about really doing, but it's more about observing and receiving and letting things come up and give the space for that, because it's not done with the experience itself, but it's a longer process, even though we might not feel it like that. But for me, then it's important to be there just on the phone or SMS or call, video call if that's necessary. But oftentimes, if it's not a really, really struggling, or if it's not a real intense, challenging experience, people are quite fine afterwards with just going into nature, with eating healthy food, with taking rest, with sleeping, with listening to music. And I think these kind of self-nourishing things that you can do, self-care that you can do afterwards, is very important in the days and maybe 2 weeks after this kind of session. So I'm there if it's necessary, but oftentimes people don't really need that in that point. And I think then, like as I said, integration is a lifestyle. So you once you open this bag, you can't close it anymore, really. And there are new things coming up. So it's a process. And normally I invite the people to reach out within a week after the experience. And then we have a call, and maybe after 2, 4, 5 weeks. So it's really like on their demand. And for me, this feels good. And oftentimes it's also depends on the person, on the system around the person. So oftentimes they maybe have already a coach or a therapist or somebody else they see. And then it's just me on top for maybe things they can't discuss with them, for example. So that's also an option. And it's very individual. So it's not like a therapy where you go like every week or twice a week for a year or something like that. So it's really like on demand, because it is not. You can't tell how this process goes. Some need earlier on more assistance, some don't need it at all, some need it later. So yeah, it's very individually.
I love that there is so much sensitivity around what is needed, and that you go with that flow with the people you work with. I also, from my experience, feel that there is a bigger and bigger demand of people who want coaches or therapists who have a psychedelic experience, so they can have a space where they know they're understood, even though they might not put the right words what this is, so they're not met with questions or judgment, or it's very difficult to explain to a person who has not yet had a psychedelic experience like what this is, because there's simply no reference points in language or in their psyche or everyday consciousness, like what this experience can do or evokes. And I love also just to highlight, because I found it very profoundly how you put it, that the time afterwards is a time to receiving, to really grounding, to opening, preparing the space. When you get the chance to do preparation work with your clients, retreat or individually, do you emphasize on this space after retreats to not go, directly back into work or into the old system? How is this met, and what are the things that you share practically with the people so they can take this space time to receive, to integrate, to go slow?
So I oftentimes recommend the people who are coming to really take a few days off afterwards, to maybe when we book an Airbnb or a place that they can stay there a few days longer, that it's in nature, that they don't have to work from there, and really prepare beforehand how you want to be afterwards. Even though we might feel different, but it is always a good choice to take a few days afterwards off, because I did it myself in a different way as well, once or twice, and I really felt how hard this can be. When you're so open, when you're so like connected with yourself, and you then have to go into a train station or an airport, or you have to
Oof.
drive a long way home or whatever it is, but it can be very overwhelming. And I think it is a big present that you can give yourself, to give yourself time afterwards for really taking your time and doing nothing and just sitting there staring into the trees and sleeping. And that's the most beautiful thing you can do afterwards, right after the journey for me. And so what we do, we have preparation sessions beforehand. When I work for the retreat companies, for example, it is a set process, and you can get a PDF with all the things that you need, that you have to think about, that you should bring. But for me, it is more a question of also guiding the people regarding the session that will happen. So the process already starts with your decision to take it. To go into a retreat, to do a session, to start this process. And I think there is something that also already changes, or the change begins at least. And then helping the people, like, how do you want to feel? Like very simple things, drinking during the session. Do you regularly need to drink something or not? And having this in mind, and also that this can be a distraction, like talking about very practical things. Do you feel always very cold or warm? And making people aware of during the session, it can be very different. So prepare yourself with the things that you want to take layers, or if you want a blanket, even though you maybe normally don't need a blanket, or whatever it is, like these kind of practical steps. But also like preparing beforehand as well, like not working until 12 o'clock that day, and then rushing into the place where we meet and rushing into it. So really taking the time, if possible, beforehand, doing some meditations on a regular basis, some journaling maybe, to really prepare what do you want to get out of it, what do you want to let go of, or whatever it is. But really preparing emotionally, spiritually, mentally, and also body-wise. Don't eat too much heavy food a week long before you step into the ceremony. But it's also like what I saw personally now, it really depends on where you go. So some ceremonies are you eat before you go into ceremony. Totally fine. Some drink coffee before you go into ceremony. it doesn't change, well, it didn't change the experience. And it's also like being not too hard on yourself. Like when you look on the internet, there are so many regularities that you have, diets you have to follow. But when you look into different traditions, it is very different. There is not this or that. And only if you do all this, then it's good. And if not, not. And I think it's also a question where you do it. Like, do you go into the jungle? Do you go to indigenous places? It will be very challenging for your body if you have never been there before. So take time beforehand to accommodate your body to the experience being in the jungle without any substances and taking these kind of things into consideration. So when I prepare the people for sessions that we do together, it's a different process than if people call me because they want to do a session somewhere else. So it's always depending on what this will be, where will it be, what kind of substance will it be. So then you have different things you have to prepare people for, obviously.
A lot of details, a lot of things to consider. I love the example that if you're going to the jungle, take time to accommodate to the climate as well. There's so many small things that might not be on the radar to consider. So it's really valuable to have somebody who can see it more broader, holistically, as you offer it and support somebody in this process of change facilitation, as you said. It's eloquently, it starts with the decision to take it, not only 5 minutes before it happens or the time afterwards. It's an entire experience and odyssey on itself. And I wonder, in terms of integration, especially working with plant medicine, let's say ayahuasca that I know you do. People might have the experience to have a lot of visuals or visions or even archetypal symbolism. One could argue it's from the subconscious, from the collective, from whatever. Like it depends on the frame of reference, of course. How do you help people integrate this symbolism, these visions into their practical everyday life without getting lost into the stories or even fabricating new stories? For the imagery that we see.
I think it, like in the beginning, I thought like it is better to really go with the, sorry. I still have a little frog in my throat.
We
So,
welcome the frog.
yes. Frogs are always welcome.
Exactly.
So I think there are different ways of integration and there are different approaches. And I also see different approaches. So sometimes it is an approach of just letting people share, just letting share and not say anything, because oftentimes by sharing, you find your own resolutions, you find your own aha moments, and it makes sense. And oftentimes you can't really see that from the outside. And that is a part of what I do as well, because I find it very important. And I'm quite surprised oftentimes what people make out of their own experience and the things that they tell afterwards, that they find their own meaning in it and what they can then integrate in their life. And for me, it is also a combination, because sometimes I think when like seeing a lot of people going through processes and you have a reference point where you feel like in this direction it could be. So sometimes I tend to ask questions and maybe the question leads nowhere and then we drop it. And sometimes I feel like, okay, I have to share this. And maybe it is helpful. And then I offer it as a present. So I say, like, hey, this is something that comes up in me. And I want to share it with you. But if it doesn't work for you, if it doesn't mean anything, throw it away. It's totally fine. And this is important for me to have this kind of process. Like there are things that I feel like it is a certain pattern that I see oftentimes in processes or people. Then at least give it as a hint, and sometimes it really works, and oftentimes it's quite precise. Interestingly enough, so I think it really depends on from which point of view or method in integration you also come. So I have sometimes the discussions with my colleague from the podcast with Yannick. We do the Talking About Coaching and Psychedelics podcast, and he's a real coach. I'm not a real coach. For me, it's way too interesting to dive deeper, not only with questions. And also sometimes I share things from myself, from my own experience. And for me, this works because it's from a authentic, I hate the word authentic, but from a true point of view that I share something from myself. And sometimes it really helps people to get a new insight or a new perspective on things. And that's me. But he, for example, is a real good coach, and he's asking brilliant questions and brings people there to their own knowledge and to their own truth. And I think it's just the difference in how you feel comfortable in working. And sometimes I don't say a word and we just draw or do body work or dance. And then afterwards, there comes what needs to come. And it's really very individually with the person. Sometimes when people are very much in their head and they're very used to be in their head and they're very mentally very sharp and they can analyze everything and they want to put everything into boxes afterwards, because then it's done. Then I have the conclusion and then I can work with it because I put it into three boxes and they are here. And for me, then it's more like, okay, leave the boxes behind. We store them under the bed and we go a different path now, because maybe there is something else that you didn't realize yet, but that can be very, very helpful for your future. And then I work differently. So it is kind of intuitive how I work, and based on a lot of different modalities that I learned during the past 15, 20 years, yeah.
How do you cultivate this kind of discernment and intuition in your work? Or maybe differently put, when you put your personality aside and become a servant for the process and for the human being and try to attune what is actually called forward, dance, physical touch, silence, question, like, what's your own practice and cultivation of these qualities within you?
How I practice it for myself?
The way how you describe it, it feels you're very connected to your intuition and to your discernment, what the process needs. And one part of it, I would assert, is to have a lot of knowledge or acquired a lot of methods and toolboxes, but also be very present to understand, like, what is it right now that's you feel called to the most, or almost like tingling what's you have to share or point a different direction. Do you have your own practice or way of coming back to this space, intuition? How do you prepare, for example, if you work with a client or between client work, to continuously be in that, I don't want to say channel, because it's a little bit charged, but this clear, clear space of the heart.
I think it builds up within many years through the practice that I do for myself, like from meditation, about dancing, about body work, about yoga, and whatever there is, mindfulness practices, and also like working with the womb. For me, it is like in these moments, I reconnect, I settle down in my womb, and I connect myself with the earth. And it's just not like I have to close my eyes and I have to go inside and I have to feel it for 5 minutes, but it's like, okay, there it is. And then I internally feel like I'm reconnected again if I lost it. And I think the things that I do are just offers. And from the outside, I can never know really what it is, what the other person needs. And I think that's also a process of preparing the other person to be assertive enough to say in that moment, this is not right for me. Because I think that is what a lot of people also struggle with. Like, there is somebody who tells you what to do, and then it should be right because the person maybe has more knowledge or seems to have more experience or whatever it is. And then we take it for what it is. And I think it's also important to create a sphere in what the client also can say, like, hey, I think we go the wrong way. I can't relate to what you said, or it doesn't feel right what we are doing now. Like, and not feeling ashamed of saying that. And I think it is also like when that happens, it is not wrong for me that I did something wrong, but it's like, okay, that's how the system looks like at the moment. Okay, so there's something else needed. So for me, it's more like it gives me also the direction. So I sometimes need these kind of course corrections. And it makes more sense then, because then I can go deeper and then I find the better spot maybe. So for me, it's not bad if I offer something and it's maybe not 100% correct or not wanted in that moment, but it's a feedback for me that, okay, that's not it. Okay, we go another direction, or maybe we can go deeper there because you really don't want that. Why don't you want it? So maybe there is something. And that, I think, is the intuition that is then behind it to tell me, like, do I have to ask questions? Do I have to offer things we can do together? Do I have to set the person down to draw something or whatever it is? And that behind, I think, is the intuition of which way shall we go? And then it's kind of a dance. And I think that's the beauty when it works well, then it is kind of a dance that you have with your client.
Quote Julia, a dance with your client. I absolutely love it. Beautifully put. It seems that if I may put some words to what you express, it's almost like you have a very feminine with a capital F approach, which is based on this movement, on this flexibility, this intuitive way, versus, for example, how you describe your colleague Yannick, who has a very masculine capital M, like it has nothing to do with male or female approach, which is very directive, very ratio question focused. I have never seen him coach or ask questions, so this is like purely based on what you have shared. But to me, it feels that how you expressed your work is very soft, very attuned, very present, and resonates very beautifully. I want to switch a little bit gears very, very gently, and would love to hear your thoughts on the rise of popularity of psychedelics and increase of retreats and sessions that have been offered all over the world. Doesn't matter if it's microdosing or like a bigger dosage. Sometimes with people without training or even experience, and I say sometimes there are people who just had one experience and just are so happy and fulfilled and want to share it. But what's your thoughts on the rise of psychedelics and the popularity of the usage of that?
Good question. And I think also there it is not black or white, because on the one hand, I really love that is that popular and that it becomes more popular, because then there is a chance of making it more legal in different ways in different countries and make it more accessible to people. And I think that is the good side if it's done in the right way. There is, of course, also a turning side, and I think the more popular it gets, the more people are in the space again with interest in power, in money, in exploiting things, and the whole topic about reciprocity, I think, is a big one of giving back and being aware that it's not we invented it. It's like it is there since so many years, but we make it now as a tool. So we change in a way the purpose, and we have to be aware of what are we borrowing, and are we just taking on, or are we borrowing, or are we happy to receive something that we can work with in our own way? So I think there are many, many different questions still not answered. And I think that the danger also is the more popular it gets, the more people take it, also maybe in a not safe setting, which doesn't mean that if people want to do it on a festival that it's wrong, or like recreational that it's wrong. It's just a different way of taking psychedelics. But also in a recreational setting, the set and setting can be safe or unsafe. And I think it is very important to give more education for people out there to let them be able to make the right choices and to take things that they take in a responsible way. Because otherwise, there will be more and more cases where something happened, where people had a psychosis afterwards, or like the things that are now in the media where somebody died and it is connected to psychedelic, or that, yeah, other things. So when they become public, it is one thing that went wrong, and it can tear the whole movement in a way down. I feel like now the movement is big enough and stable enough to also be able to handle these kind of smaller things that happen. But it is still fragile in a way, and I think that topics like harm reduction and education in general about psychedelics and the use of psychedelics is very important. And I'm a bit afraid that if that becomes really a therapy, that it also becomes a therapy again for just a certain type of people. And that's why for me, psychedelics is not only therapy related, but also like start with it before it becomes worse, before you need a diagnosis. And to work on the things so that they can build up to become something, which doesn't mean that I invite everybody to take psychedelics. So there are contraindications, and I think we all need to be aware of that there are contraindications, and there are people who should never take psychedelics, and that's okay. And they find other ways. But it is like there's so much still that needs to be built up, that needs to be talked about, that needs to be answered, and to find a way how we can do all this in a responsible way to help people find their own decisions, make their own responsible decisions in what they do.
Yeah, good point. Very, very eloquently put. That brings me to the perspective of native tribes or wisdom keepers. And I know you have been studying with them and really being very close to this people who have been offering and connecting to the plant medicine already since I don't know how long time ago. But what do you think from your experience by being very close to them, is their perspective on the rise of psychedelics or the state of the world, the approaches that we're taking? Can you maybe pinpoint some direction here as well?
I think it is hard to tell. Hard to tell what it is really behind it. Because I think they are very willing to share their knowledge. and their wisdom until a certain point as well, because I think it is like with integrations as well. Some people, and especially indigenous people, say like, don't share your experience. It changes by sharing. Don't talk about it. And I think that is something as well. And I'm not close enough. I didn't live for many years in these kind of communities to be that deeply connected to really have a feeling for that. So I can't really answer this question. It is more from a point of I have been with different cultures, different indigenous tribes, different substances there, through my study that I do as well. So I'm very happy to have this opportunity to go deep into these spaces and places and get to know the people there who they work with the medicines. And still, it is just we can't look at it from a totally different point of view, and we are not in that culture, in that space as they are, because it's just not possible. At least for me, that's my point of view. Maybe if you live there for many, many months, years, that it's easier. But when we go there for working with them for maybe a month, it is not enough. They have training for years, and it is how they are and how their way of life is. And I think it is very hard to tell how they really see it. I think they see that there's an exploitation of things, of certain things, and that there is a danger if it becomes more that nature will, or parts of nature will die from it, or get harmed from it. And I think that's what they see. And I think also, like, they are connected now more and more to the Western world, and it's also about money. So there are for sure some villages who see that there is also money in there, which is not bad, but it is just also a question of, do you have the time to learn how to handle that then? Or is it just we put our westernized culture in these villages and they see how it's now, but they didn't have the time, the 100, 200 years to develop until this point. But then there's certainly everything there, and it can be overwhelming, and it can lead to maybe wrong choices that are not healthy for them, because it's maybe interesting, or it sounds good, or, and that's a thing that I can only see from my point of view where I am now. So it's not the truth, but it is what I see and what I hear, what I feel. Like, in the perspective or in the position where I am, I'm very grateful to have these opportunities and to get the knowledge from them that I can get. And I know that it's not everything. And I know that I will always be somebody from the outside. And whatever that means, whatever that brings, positive and negative. I hope I
Yeah,
answered your
very
question in a
ground,
way.
absolutely very grounded perspective. And I think this is a very mature lens. How you answered that it's impossible to put ourselves completely in the other shoes, because it's just such a different way how we, from the base on, view reality and relate to it. I would love to ask you the following question, because it's so different, it relates to a little bit to this different lens. How would you define shaman or shamanic experience? Because that's a term that I found is being often used also in this context. And how do you define it, or what is a shaman or shamanic experience?
I mean, I use the word as well, and I always, when I use it, I feel like, oh, I shouldn't use it. but it is a container, I think. For me, it is a container of, many different ways of holding ceremonies, of having knowledge, of being connected to other worlds, being connected to nature, working with spirits, perspectives on life. But for me, shamanism, if you see it from the, like, where the word, at least what I read, is it comes more from Siberia. So that is a shamanic perspective. But they don't work with the plant medicines. They work in the in Brazil or in Colombia, in Ecuador, and they also call shamans. And then you have people in Germany who call themselves shamans. And I just sometimes I feel inside something sprinkling in me because I feel like no, because like becoming a shaman, if you want to call it like that, it's not you learn it and you get a certificate and you did a course of 3 months and then you're a shaman, but you're born with it. And oftentimes the people who are these kind of medicine people in a village or in a community, they became it because there was something bad happening also to them. Like they had a very nearly deadly disease or something happened to them or whatever it is. And then they were chosen in that way. And still, I think it is also not really appropriate to take that on here and trying to be the same, because I think as well that we can be connected to spirits, we can work with nature, we can be connected to nature, and but it's our own way. Why do we need to have to call it the same way even though we are different? And it's more, and I don't have an answer for it because I don't know the right word or the right description for it, but for me it is more a feeling of we are all on this earth. We are all connected to Earth if we want it, and we can relearn it in a certain way, maybe not as much as the people who live just constantly in the jungle, who are connected in a different way because they don't have a computer or microphones or a television or whatever they're influenced by the whole day. So it is different. But we here can learn also very beautiful ways to work, not in a Western medicine way only. And still, how do we want to call it? Do we need to call it shaman to be comparable, or what is the reason behind it? And I find it very hard to put a word onto it because you always tend to compare it. And if somebody tells me, like, I want to take ayahuasca, like, okay, which kind and which tribe, with which tradition, with which music? Do you like silence or do you like music the whole night through? And it's still called ayahuasca in a way if you don't call it yahe, which then is also again a different brew. And it is like, then have a deeper look. And it's, for me, the word shaman or shamanism is kind of the same container. I know what you mean and I don't know it. So it always brings questions with it. Like, okay, from which tradition? What do you travel with? Only a drum? Do you travel with substances? And I think the basis underneath everything is that kind of connection that we all could have if we dive into it and want it. If not, then not. And that's okay too. I mean, there are many people who live a happy life. We're not drawn to, I need to go deeper, I need to explore everything, I have to become a shaman or whatever. And they have a happy life. Why change that? It's not necessary. Yeah.
Oh,
answer to shamanism.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love it. I love how you lay out very eloquently, very thoughtful your observations, your yeah, worldview or beliefs or just sensations and feelings. It's very insightful.
Thank you.
I would love to talk with you ages and more, longer and longer, but I also know that all time is coming to an end. It's an illusion. Okay, that's another topic. But let's round up. I would love to hear What was the greatest perspective shift you have experienced recently, let's say 1 or 2 years? So something where you firmly were rooted in one perspective and then were maybe now looking back, it's like, how could I believe that? And I completely switched to the other polar opposite. Is there something that comes to your heart or mind where you shifted your perspective just recently or in the last 1 and 2 years?
Yes, there's something, and I was always hesitant to share it. And I normally share it just with certain people. But yes, because I had a session, an experience where I for myself realized, and I don't know if it's true, but for myself, I realized nothing really matters because nothing is there. It's all an illusion. And for me, it gave me so much peace. So that's the short version, but it is something that I can tell some people who are not in this bubble of psychedelics, who are not in this bubble of self-development, because they hold on to things quite tightly and it works in a certain way for them. And it's important that they hold on to certain things, and it's good. If it's not a problem, it's good. And for me, it became so trust and calm giving to have this thought of nothing is really there, nothing is real. And I can do what I want in a way with the thought or with the knowing that I'm here now living this life. So, yes, there are certain things that seem to be real in this moment that I have to do. It's not like I can do whatever I want because, of course, I don't want to harm anything. I don't want to cause harm for people or whatever it is. So, being conscious about that as well. But underneath now, there is this kind of thought of it doesn't really matter. And this, for me personally, gives me a lot of peace.
Beautifully put. And I guess if I may add, I think it also has to do something with how, where the person is at their level of consciousness or awareness, how they can receive the words that you just shared. For some, it might be disruptive in a quote unquote negative sense or maybe misinterpreted. And for some, it can be very liberating as you speak to really feel this truth.
And I think that's, I relate that a lot to taking psychedelics. Like, it is not, some people who take psychedelics for the first time, they are so overwhelmed beautifully by it. And they want to share it with everybody, and they want everybody to take psychedelics because it is the best thing to do. And I think it is the same thing with this thought. Like, I have to know with whom I share it because it can be harmful for the person or for the relationship that you have with that person. And it's not for everybody. And when you see, like in German, you have this when du einen Hammer hast, siehst du überall Nägel. So when you have a hammer, you see everywhere the, what is it? Nails, no.
Nails, yes.
Nails you put into the wall. So you want to help everything, and it's the best thing, and you want to persuade everybody that it's the best thing to do. And I think that's also the danger with psychedelics. That when you have one or two sessions and you're so overwhelmed and have so much energy and it's so beautiful that you want to just give it to everybody. And just to be mindful of it is not for everybody, and it is okay that it is like that.
Yeah, I agree. We're not trying to be pizza, which is going to be liked by everyone,
Yeah.
if that makes sense. If you had to pick one practice or activity or priority that you would choose to do for infinity every single day, what would it be?
Nothing. I'm sorry, I'm not built like that. I would be bored very soon. So I need these different things, and I love to do different things, and that is what gives me energy and what lets me thrive to stay in the curiosity, because for me, curiosity is the most important thing. And if I lose that, then I think my life will be very boring. And so I don't choose for one practice.
Super. Also a beautiful answer. It was such a pleasure having you here in the show, really. As I shared before, I would love to continue talking to you.
Yes.
And just a pleasure to listen to you, your point of views, your wisdom, your experience. Would you share, like, how can people connect with you? How can they find you? Yeah.
Thank you. First, thank you for inviting me. It was really, really nice talking to you. It was a beautiful conversation. I wouldn't say an interview because I felt really it was a conversation. So thank you for that. And where can people find me? So the easiest way, I think, is on my website. It's just juliabamberg.com, juliabamberg.com. Or on Instagram, if you put my name, you will find me under my name as well. And I think that's the most easy thing. If you want to listen more to my voice and also the voice of my colleague, I might say that we have a podcast as well on talking about coaching and psychedelics. So it's mainly focused on coaching and psychedelics. So, but we have very interesting interview guests as well. So have a listen there as well. And yeah, thank you again. It was a pleasure, and I would love to come back and would love to see you in person.
Yay. Likewise, Julia. So good to hear you. You will find to the ones listening all what she has mentioned in the links in the show notes. Yeah, thank you very much and farewell, everyone. Until next time.
Thank you. Bye bye.